Accession number 20457, reel 12.
Brigadier Randall, reel 12. You were saying the Japanese had got into position. You'd attacked them, and you made some inroads into their position, but you weren't able to actually clear it. So what happened next?
Well, we withdrew, and then there were another battalion was put in to attack, and that failed. And in the end, I think it was the 4th/1st Gurkhas from another division put in. It was really a question of attrition. The Japanese had been losing casualties all this period. In the end, I think they'd had enough, and they up sticks and pulled out.
Presumably, they would also have been cut off from resupply.
I think they were running out of men. They were running out of ammunition. They were running out of everything. But they stopped sticks and whence they'd come. I have to say, I thought it was a magnificent feat of arms. It's interesting to know that the Japanese memorial to the soldiers who were lost at the Battle of Imphal has been erected on Red Hill.
Obviously regarded as a significant place.
Well, it was the nearest they ever got to Imphal. They were making a supreme effort to get there. And touch and go, they might have. Whether they'd made a significant entry into Imphal, I don't know. But only been small parties. But anyway, that was as far as they ever got.
And that was about 16 miles south.
My master 16, yeah.
What was there a substantial reevaluation of the situation as a result of this Japanese attack? Did you find that you were then put into?
Well, no. I think. The main part of 17 did was about 3 or 4 miles south at Brown Bishanpur.
Yes.
With the 48 Brigade. And then we had 32 Brigade from 20th Indian Division under command. I think our division paid it sensibly. They held their ground and just regard this as an annoying infiltration which had to be dealt with. Like a bushfire put out there, but it didn't alter their resolve to hold the Bishanpur Silchar track area, where my battalion was then sent.
So in other words, it sounds like they regarded this Japanese force as a nuisance rather than a serious threat.
Yeah, but because it had high overtones, because it was jolly nearly scuppered, but divisional headquarters, and therefore their reaction was perhaps a little bit more, I won't say hysterical, but they certainly took a bit more notice than if it had just been near some ammunition depot or some supply depot. And of course it was a stride. It did also, of course, block the road south, so until it was cleared, no ammunition, no reinforcements, no rations could get down to the main division. So it was a brilliant bit of soldiering by the Japanese.
Did divisional headquarters move its location after this occurrence?
No, it didn't actually. They took it pretty coolly, really. But obviously, when you've got a Japanese battalion just over the top of the hill from you, you take it fairly seriously, but not too seriously.
So you were then sent south, presumably.
Well, we were then sent off with this thing called, first of all, Luckery Force under this Brigadier Wood, where we did some fighting for about a week, and then we went down and joined 63 Brigade on the Silchar track.
What fighting did you do with Luckery Force?
We were out on a sort of layback position to the west. See, the Japanese kept on trying to get round. They couldn't get round to the east because of the log tack lake. So they kept on trying to hook round to the ground to the west to get round to Imphal. And so we were sent out to deal with some Japanese who had infiltrated, I think a place called Numsigum, I think it was called. I could look it up on the map.
Well, how did you go about taking, dealing with that infiltration? Was it a question of fighting patrols or formal attacks?
Well, no, we were dug in on positions.
So you're blocking...
We were then... we had a new CO who was finding his way. He was ordered to do one attack, and he went up and looked at the ground, and he said this was so suicidal that he said he wasn't going to do it, which I thought showed remarkable moral courage. He didn't know I was listening on the other telephone. And I thought he was going to be sacked, and I've always afterwards admired him. And he more than said to the brigadier, "Well, Brigadier, I have been up there, and I can tell you that it's just not on." And the brigadier said, "Oh, well, if the Baluchis won't do it, the frontier force will." So he ordered the frontier force. They went in and were practically wiped out. So my CO vindicated himself. I think this brigadier did have the good sense to come afterwards and say, "I wish I'd accepted your advice." But anyway, I admired that my colonel for showing moral courage.
What was the reason for this position being so strong? Did you see it yourself?
It was a sort of narrow whaleback position. So you could only attack up the whale, and of course the Japanese could bring directed fire across the whole ridge. You couldn't get tanks up there, and there was no other way you could approach the position. And though we had quite a substantial amount of artillery, again the Japanese they dug in so well.
What sort of strength was their position on the whaleback?
I think it was a couple of companies, actually. I mean, a frontal attack was not the answer. We had one of our company commanders killed by mortar fire there. But apart from that, we were only there about a week before we went down to the Silchar track, and there we did get. It was rather like the Western. I imagine the Western Front. We were dug in these wired-in positions, and the Japanese were only 50, 60 yards away.
That must have been rather uncomfortable to be so close.
Everyone was very mixed up. There was the Northamptons were there, and the 2nd, 5th Gurkhas. I mean. We had a platoon of the Northamptons we had battalion headquarters and one company in a position. We had platoon Northamptons, and then we had other companies in company positions or even platoon positions. And for about 3 weeks, there was very intensive fighting indeed.
What was the ground like on the
Silchar? Well, we were up this. This was a track reading from Bishanpur, which is down on the plain.
Yes.
Westward up over the hills surrounding the Imphal Plain, much thicker sort of scrub than the Chin Hills, very, very wet. Quite a lot of cover, but of course, a lot of that, it was quite intensive fighting, so a lot of the trees and things had been burned down by shell fire and that sort of thing. And it was just a very, very hard infantry slog with the Japanese attacking and then we counterattacking. Some positions changed hands several times. I was controlled a sort of fire support. And so I had this sort of orchestra, I suppose. And I could have been a... I got to know it. I knew all the code names for all the fire. We had very complicated fire plans with mortars, mountain guns, 25-pounders, medium guns, machine guns. It all had different code names, and I sort of had to control this particular part of the front, which was quite an important task, because I had to know where if there were trolls out, if somebody, and I alone sort of knew what all the code names were. So I remember we shared a command post with the 5th Gurkhas, and but their adjutant, he and I, who suddenly became a chum of mine, he said, well, you better run it, because you know what you're about.
How far from the front line was this command post?
Well, right. Well, I mean, we were all front line there. I mean, then, of course, there was no anybody else. There were Japanese all round, really.
Yeah. So you were in the front line positions, and was this
dug in? It was a circular wide-in position.
Yes. Was it? Well, did it have overhead cover on it?
Battalion headquarters did, yeah.
And how far away were the guns and the mortars?
Well, they were down in the gun position, down on Bishanpur. We had quite a lot of guns then. I mean, we had our own field regiment.
Yes.
And then when the 2nd Division arrived, their artillery came down. Because they reckoned that Bishanpur was the key area. This had to be held. This is where the Japs were making their main effort. We certainly had a regiment of 5.5s. There were some 4.5 anti-aircraft guns firing the long range, but they were so bloody dangerous and so inaccurate that they gave. And they were right for harassing fire the Japs, but it wasn't any good. Sadly, the VCO who got his VC holding Red Hill was killed by our own fire. Sadly, during that fight.
Dropping short.
Well, it's certainly a 5.5 hit his position.
Well, if there's only 50 or 60 metres from the Japanese, it's not really a safety margin.
They shouldn't
margin,
have been firing 5.5s, actually.
No.
That's the answer. The gunner shouldn't have taken it on with a medium gun. It would be all right with 25-pounder, but anyway, it's one of those sad things of.
What was the depth of the positions? You know, how far back did the Japanese field works go? How deep were they?
Well, you see, I don't really know. There were all these pickets, like Water Picket, Broderick Pritchard Picket, Mortar Bluff, all sorts of names, and they kept on changing hands.
Were there continuous lines?
Oh no, they were just round. They were little tiny pimples of hills occupied by a platoon, and we were on a little sort of pimple.
So it sounds like a system of redoubts then.
Yeah.
To me, that you had.
Yes, well, redoubt, I suppose, is a good word, or a bastion, if you like.
All round defence.
It wasn't a continuous. Though generally speaking, one position could bring covering fire onto another one.
So you've got mutually supporting.
In some cases, you did.
Independent
yes.
Independent positions.
And then you had these medium machine guns who were firing sort of across
far,
the.
How far back were they?
Medium machine guns in Water Bluff could engage somebody on another picket there. It was the only time in the whole Burma campaign really where one sat down and fought a sort of static fighting.
And how did you actually control all these fire support weapons? Did you have were you using wireless or were you using telephone?
Mixture. This place, Water Picket, was occupied by Subedar Netra Bahada Tapa. And he came through on the telephone to me. And he spoke in Gurkhali, but it's sufficient. But he realized he was talking to a non-Gurkha officer, so he switched to Urdu. And I remember him calling for this artillery. He hadn't got an FOA, calling for this defensive fire, and I said yes. Then the line went dead, and I got him the fire, but his platoon was overrun that night, and he won a posthumous Victoria Cross. And the next day, the 2nd Fifth Gurkhas won another VC, a chap called Agan Singh Rai got a VC. The only time I've ever seen Gurkhas going in with cookery, which is quite a awe-inspiring sight.
What were they counterattacking to try and get the.
They were counterattacking this thing being overrun.
Did they get it back?
Yeah, they did.
And you were saying
then another. But we used to say, well, this this particular, we had actually held that position for a fortnight.
Yes.
And the Gurkhas took it over and lost it, but they were so, and we didn't throw it in their face, but I mean, they were determined to get it back.
Mm.
It was, and the Northamptons did jolly well too. It was probably the most bloodthirsty and closest fighting that I certainly experienced in Burma. I mean, there were four VCs were won in a week in one area about a mile square. So, to the extent that VC is an indication of intensity of fighting, it was fairly intense stuff.
Were you? What were your main targets when you were controlling the fires? What were you? Was it mainly defensive?
Well, they were defensive fire towers.
Yes.
To try and catch the Japanese massing for an attack, or actually attacking. Mm. And our chaps were fairly well dug in, so you could accept a certain amount of. Fairly close artillery support.
Were they well wired as well?
Yeah, they were. They were. Yes.
Yeah. Did you were there mines too? What about the ground in between these positions?
Well, this had sort of plantings and things that sort of thing and long grass, but that a lot of them got that sort of flattened out.
Mm. So you could actually maintain observation over the ground.
Yes. Yeah. Most of the fighting was done at night.
Ah. I was going to ask you
at one stage, not unfortunately where we were, the Japanese, for the first and only time, brought up flamethrowers, which caused a certain amount of alarm and despondency.
Yeah.
For the only time, extraordinary reason, we produced some too. I don't know why they hadn't produced them earlier, but anyway...
Were they an effective weapon against the Japanese defences?
Well, I have no personal experience. It didn't happen. I know that it was the 1st, 7th Gurkhas. The Gurkhas weren't very happy about this at all. And I think one of the few times I've ever heard where they thought Gurkhas were getting a bit shaky. I mean, I think we'd have been shaky too. I would have been shaky. The idea of sitting in a trench and being scorched by a flamethrower is not very pleasant. But then I'm sure we brought up some flamethrowers ourselves. And anyway, that was the only time, really, that it didn't matter to much. It was just one of those little incidents. Mm.
What sort of style of attack were the Japanese using in this area? Were they doing massed wave assaults, or were they attempting infiltration?
Well, they attempted... Most of the fighting was at night. They would come up... they did have some artillery support, but... They had some 105. They did a certain amount of shelling, but they didn't. They didn't do a sort of a concentration on a position and then attack it as we would do. Mm-hmm. They tended to come up, get in all around, and then just then come close in with the last few yards with bayonets and assault it like that. It was fairly basic sort of 1914-18 stuff.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to carry out any counter-battery shoots?
Well, I don't know. The Japanese artillery really was never, throughout the whole war, was never really... I mean, it was unpleasant, but it was never a factor. I mean, they'd shell quite a bit. I mean, we say you can get... their mortars were much more unpleasant, I think. Those were the ones that really they could get those into action very quickly, very much more accurately. I think there must have been counter battery work. Yes, I mean we had enough guns to do it. But the shelling was more of a nuisance than a serious tactical threat, I think.
Did the battalion have to do any counter attacks?
Who?
Your battalion, did they do counter attacks?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's going on all the time, actually. Mm.
How would you conduct a counterattack on one of these posts normally? What sort of formation would the troops be in for the approach and the assault?
Well, I think in our cases, we tended to soften them up, give them a really good pasty. We tended, I think, to when we did it, to try and do it by daylight, actually.
Yes.
To give it a really good pasting. We had quite a lot of guns, as I say, and then mortars. I mean, there was a lot of artillery and mortars around. You could give it a really good thing, and then close in and just hack your way in. Mm. I mean, it wasn't particularly sort of. There was no other way. It was a little pimple there. There was no sort of easy answer. It was just to soften it up and hope you could fight your way in. And generally speaking, it seemed to be effective.
How long would you give it in the way of softening up? What sort of length of bombardment before you did the infantry assault?
Well, I mean, it wasn't like the sort of the Somme where you did it for days. I mean, I think you'd decide you'd give it perhaps 5 minutes of intensive fire and then go in. Mm. I mean, there was plenty of artillery and plenty of ammunition. It wasn't unlimited, because it all had to still be flown in. Because the latter stages of the fighting mission, for admittedly the road from Kohima had been opened and we had the second Div artillery joined us, but certainly the earlier stages, it all had to be flown in. So, I mean, you just couldn't latch it out. Absolutely. It wasn't unlimited ammunition. Mm-hmm. And so it was a question of short and sharp.
How did the infantry actually deal with the Japanese dug-in positions when they got into them? What was the main method of clearing them? Was it grenade or Tommy gun?
It was grenades. Grenades and Tommy gun. And, of course, with the Gurkhas, it was the cookery. I mean, they went in with the cookery. As I saw.
Does that mean they had their rifle slung then? As though
they seemed to sling it over. Yes. Mm. I mean, I've never fought with Gurkhas, but I mean, it was a very bloodthirsty thing. I mean, a Gurkha, the chap I saw, anyway. I mean, he just didn't hit this Japanese once. He cut him up into little pieces. It's a very bloodthirsty business. Mm. But Archers used a bayonet. It was back to sort of 1418 stuff.
Did you have a lot of casualties in the course of this fortnight?
Yeah, quite a few.
Hard fighting.
Yeah, we had officers killed, and yes, we did, inevitably.
Did you get replacements coming up too?
Not then. No. Yeah, we had one or two officer replacements. Mm. But one unfortunate second lieutenant, whose name was Monk, reported to me as adjutant, and he'd only been there 5 minutes, and somebody said, oh, well, he's got to go to the first fourth Gurkha, because they'd had a very high... So the unfortunate second lieutenant of the Baluchis, who'd never hardly seen a Gurkha, was sent off. He lasted 24 hours, and he got the chop.
What happened to him?
He got killed. Mm. I don't know how. I mean, the 1st-4th Gurkhas had 300% officer casualties. They had an establishment of 12, and I think they had 36 officers killed or wounded. So that anybody... It was really rather like the sort of Western Front. I mean, it is something, but it came up. I mean, it was bloody stupid to send a chap really like that. But
rapid turnover.
Yes. I always feel rather sorry for that young chap. I was young myself. I felt it was a... awful waste, not waste exactly, but I just felt sorry for him that he... It's a funny thing that very often there were a few chaps like myself who always survived the whole lot, and then young chaps would come up and they'd cop it. It was just one of those extraordinary things that seem to happen in war, that few people get spared and other people just get churned over.
Do you think that was a matter of luck or a matter of the fact that you learned how to survive? It was a matter of judgment and skill.
I'd bet a little bit of both. The fact is, I think it's a matter of luck, really. I mean, I've had chaps killed standing next to me on any number of occasions. I think it's just a matter of luck, really. Mm. I've had AFOO killed standing next to me. I think it's just a matter of pure luck, actually. Mm. And certainly I wasn't being clever. I don't think I was any more particular. I don't think I was windy, but I didn't go around flaunting myself unnecessarily, unless I had to. No, I think it's a matter of luck, really.
It's quite a lot of veterans of fighting say that if you manage to survive the first few days, then you acquire a certain instinctive knowledge of how to survive on the battlefield, and your expectations
improve. There's something
improve.
In that, yes. Because I mean, this guy, for instance. I was commanding Union soldiers. They were fair-skinned, but I wore a beret just like them. I didn't blacken my face. Some chaps did. I wasn't going to do that, in case my chaps were so fair-skinned. But this gunner officer, this FOO, had an officer's peaked cap on. So he and I were standing there, deciding on a fire plan, and he got the bullet and I didn't. But, I mean, and I said to the gunner's officer, I said, you know, it's a bit silly, really, for him to wear a hat like that. Why didn't he wear a beret like the rest of us? Because he's so obviously an officer.
Standing out.
Yes. I mean, I was standing up, but I mean, because I had to do the job. But I mean, I wasn't sticking my neck out by wearing something made. It's a bit of common sense, really.
Was he killed by a sniper? Was that
killed by a sniper? Yeah.
Were the Japanese active in sniping? Generally,
well, this was later. This was. I'm talking about now. Later at Mactilla.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, this wasn't at Imphal. No,
so they weren't sniping at Imphal.
No. I really, to illustrate the point.
Yes, of course.
A little bit of common sense. I mean, sometimes you've got to show yourself as an officer, but you don't. To wear a hat to show bravado is not. I don't think it's very sensible.
How did you and your men stand up to this fortnight? Because presumably it was a fairly sleepless time, as well as dangerous
yes.
and busy.
Well, they stood up pretty well. We didn't seem to have a morale problem. We had some very good officers in the battalion by then who really knew their stuff, and the chaps were well led. We had a good commanding officer who knew his stuff. I mean, I explained today, he had the moral courage to refuse to do that attack. No problems at all, really. I mean, people got tired, and that sort of thing. But no, there was no. We thought we were winning, as indeed we were.
By winning, how did you know you were winning? Was it because you were taking back ground and positions from the Japanese, or making inroads into their positions?
Well, we had far more artillery than them.
Yes.
That was very obvious. After some initial air attacks, the Royal Air Force managed to assert itself, and there was quite a lot of friendly air. We could see hurry bombers going in and hitting people. All those sort of indications that we were doing all right, really. And rations and things came up. If a chap was wounded, there was this American field service, these wonderful Quaker chaps who would come up and run all sorts of risks to get the wounded away. If a chap felt that it was perfectly clear, if a chap was wounded, he was evacuated and got away. None of the sort of things that in the retreat from Burma earlier on, where you know, if you were wounded, well, you probably had to chip. So all those sort of factors led to a high morale. So morale was very surprisingly good.
Were you actually gaining ground from the Japanese, pushing them back? This
no, we were holding ground.
You were holding ground. They were trying
to
attack.
Our task was as much to kill Japs as to. I mean, one bit of ground didn't have any more great significance than another, except that we couldn't let the Japanese get too many because they would eventually get a dominant position. So we tended to counterattack anything we'd lost. But it was a war, really, one of attrition, really.
Were they losing significantly more men than than we were. We were able to ascertain that at the time, that they were, their casualties were higher than
Well, they were certainly having casualties. I mean, we did